on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope Christmas has been wonderful the entire season. Happy holidays to all of you. Now we are off and running toward the new year. Got a great show for you today. Casey Smith is with us. He is running an investment company, Wiser Investments, and it is amazing how he has done, built a company of 18 people. We're going to talk to him. And then Shep Hyken will be with us in the greatest hits segment of the show. We're going to go ahead and get started right now. Here we go. I'm excited to welcome back to the show Casey Smith. He was on the show, get this, 10 years ago, and I'm excited to welcome him back. He is still running the same business that he was running then, which I think is a very strong indicator of how good it is and how successful he has been. He, for the last 25 years, has been running Wiser Wealth Management. It is an investment firm to help you figure out how to live out all of those twilight years. He's been running it since 2001. Along the way, he has won all sorts of awards from the local Chamber of Commerce, the 2015 Business Small Business of the Year, Atlanta Wealth Magazine Manager of the Year, another magazine, Top Rising Star, Alumni of the Year from Berry College, Wealth Manager of the Year for multiple years. He has also started a podcast about 5 years ago called A Wiser Retirement Podcast. Casey, welcome back. I blame you that it's been 10 years.
Hey, Jim. Glad to be back. Thanks for the invite. And we were just talking, I think 10 years ago I had hair and maybe two employees, and now we have a team of 18. I have no hair, so I'm not sure what that says about the business, but it's been a good 10 years.
Congratulations. Very successful. 18 employees. That's amazing success. And congratulations. What is the secret sauce that makes you people keep coming back to you for their
Well, okay. So I guess the secret sauce, one, I think our the financial services industry, I always joke and say it's a very low barrier to entry. It's pretty easy to hang your shingle out and say you're a financial advisor. And it's only 4% of our industry operates, in my opinion, in the best interest of the client, being that we're fiduciaries, we always work in the best interest of the client, and we are fee only, meaning that we don't sell any products. And I think part of our success has been really the heart of the firm. It's you know, we could probably have a whole conversation just on how do you hire people. That's something I've finally had figured out over the last 5 years, is how do I hire the right team members. But the heart of the firm has to do with service above self, which kind of goes back to my old roots at Berry College. And it's delivering plans that focus on people's success. And sometimes when we work with clients, we're getting paid a flat fee. And the other times we're in the traditional assets in our management model. So I think having these two different verticals that we're growing at the same time, some people want white glove service. Some people just want a blueprint for what the future looks like, but they want to do maybe some self-investing. And so the flat fee service allows for that without feeling that they're being sold assets in our management. And we typically stay away from product sales. We're not licensed to sell any products on purpose. No one wants to be sold anything, right? They want to get unbiased advice.
All right. I love it. I love the fee only. But if they do need a product, how do you get them in their hands if you're not licensed to sell it? Say they do need an insurance product or something, or God forbid, an annuity or whatever.
I don't know anybody would need an annuity, but we have a trusted network of people that we believe in, but we're sitting on the same side of the table. So our advisors would send an email out that says, hey, Jim needs a $3 million 20-year term life insurance policy. Could you please send us quotes? And that person, that professional, would respond back with quotes, and we're looking at that, those quotes along with the client and say, this is a good idea, or no, you know what? I don't like these. Let's go over here and let's contact another professional that we know to see if we can find something better. And so we're now sitting on the same side of the table shopping together. And some of those come through the Dave Ramsey network. We have a 20 plus year relationship with some guys in that network that we trust who aren't overselling. And then sometimes people come in with relationships they've already established, and we just work with them.
Okay. Well, you laid a real Easter egg there, Casey, and said, I figured out how to hire, and then you kept on going. You got to tell us now how you, your secret of hiring people, for God's sakes.
Well, I, for me, it's service. So if I go through, we have a lot of young people under the age of 28 here now. And when I go back and look at all their resumes, they have one thing in common: service. We have a young lady who, finance major in school, thought she wanted to do financial planning, was pretty sure she wanted to do financial planning, never had an internship though. But in the summertime, she spent 3 months in third world countries doing service work. We have another person that was a finance major, but a foreign mission minor. Again, service, right? We have another young man, rising star, already has a CFP, 3 years out of school, and he came from a family that was mostly in ministry, mostly on the West Coast. They moved back here to the East Coast. I can keep going down the list. The advisors that have transitioned from other firms typically say things like, I'm doing great helping a person with $50 million, but how do I just help everyday people? And I'm frustrated by this because my company doesn't allow me to do that. And they're like, well, hey, 25% of our clients who come here sometimes can't even afford our services, but we're going to figure out a way to help them. And so it takes a person with the right heart and being willing to serve their community to be successful here at Wiser. And obviously we'll go out of business if we keep working for free, right? But you have to be willing to help someone who may not be a qualified lead, in addition to obviously being an expert of multi-generational wealth families, right? So for me, I'm just looking for the heart and the things that they say. You know, Jim, I had an interview with a young man a couple of weeks ago, and he literally asked me, how much equity in the company does he get if he gets hired here?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was like, what? How much equity do you get if I hire you? I mean, this is not a software startup, right? That equity has blood, sweat, and tears over the last 25 years in it, right? So there's some really good young people out there, but you do have to do some sorting to find them.
Yes. How did you get your very, 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 very first client?
Oh, that was a neighbor, actually. So that was pretty easy.
Okay, second client.
Second client. You know, I'm getting old. I'm 48 years old. I'm older than I was when I started. Back when I was starting this business, it was, you know, you joined Rotary and you went around and you shook hands and you met with people. And so all my initial clients were friends and family and friends of friends and things like that. Our success the last 10 years has really been built on digital marketing. We've finally gotten our messaging down and our processes down to where we're meeting with anywhere from 10 to 15 prospects per week. And we grow between 20 to 30% a year. We have been for about 7 years now. And so we don't really look for clients. Clients are looking for us. And they find us because we got our banner just high enough where they can find us. Even ChatGPT is sending his clients now. Amazing, huh?
That is very interesting. Well done with that.
Yeah, it's a process. It's been a journey. Uh-huh. But it's been interesting to watch. I mean, my firm carries more marketing centered people than most firms my size, and that's just because other firms they grow by, you know, the neighbor and the friends of the friend and the referral business. And we do too, but if you want to accelerate your growth, you're going to have to think differently as a firm. And we started doing that in 2014, actually. I met a guy who recommended I read Donald Miller's building a story brand, and they have building a story brand 2.0 is out now. So I took the story brand book and put it to use. The second book I read was the follow up to that, was Marketing Made Simple, and I put that to use just as he laid out. And I can really trace my growth back to 2014 when those processes were put in place.
Excellent. I love it. I love a good system and a process.
Yes. Well, if you're going to grow and scale something, you have to have a repeatable process. People, the team here gets rolls their eyes when I say this. You get the same Chick-fil-A sandwich in Atlanta as you do in Macon, Georgia. Why is that? It's because there's a repeatable process, right? Yep. So if I want to make sure that a young planner delivers the same quality plan as the senior planner, it's because we have a process in place, right?
I love it. How far or how long can you go away and the business not suffer?
Oh, you know what? I have three children. I have one at Western Kentucky right now playing golf for them. He was at Mississippi State last year and did a little NIL move over to Western Kentucky. I have a daughter who's a nationally ranked equine rider, is an English eventing, and she's headed to University of Kentucky. I spend a lot of time with them. I'm on the road quite a bit, hauling horses to Ocala or Lexington or Aiken, and the business keeps running just fine without me. It's really a testament to people and the process that we have in place. I have a VP of operations that is kind of the glue of the business. The joke is, you know, she can be out or I can be out. We both can't be out. So I do need, we still have to have some leadership here.
Some adults got to be in charge, damn it.
Some adults got to be in charge. That's right. But I am able to step away and be my number one job as a dad. And I think I've done that pretty well over the last few years.
Well, congratulations. That is great. I love to see the kids off at schools doing things they like or passionate to them. So well done. What has been the entrepreneurial challenges that you have faced? Have you encountered the stereotypical marketing one year and finance another year? Or it shouldn't be hard for finance for you, but you had to manage your growth financially. What are the standard MBA classes that we all take? Have you know you experienced personally with any stories about your growing as a leader?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of challenges. I have a peer group that I they're you know some of my best guy friends, and you know sometimes I get stuck on something. I have the privilege of being able to call these guys. One's already retired. He built and sold his business, I think within 5 years of starting it, which is great for him. And I told him one day, I said, you know, we keep breaking processes because you have to have a process when there's more than one person involved. And now we have five people touching the same project. And he's like, well, I found in my business, if I wasn't breaking processes, if I wasn't growing fast enough. And that might be true in tech, but in my space, I don't hear other advisors saying that at all. Honestly, most of them are just looking for clients. They don't know how to grow or scale. And so for me, it's the constant of, are we doing this the best? It's reinventing the process, consistently, whether that be client onboarding or, even portfolio management, there's some processes built in there. We have 89 workflows at our firm that we need to follow to make sure that nothing gets dropped for anybody. So I say that frustration over the years is like, I've already tinkered with this. Why am I tinkering with this again? But then I found out that's probably a little more normal. Scaling, how do you it's easy to scale something. I feel like that's online. There's no relationship with the person on the other end. So if you're selling widgets, scale that company makes more sense to me. But when it's a relationship business, how do you pass off hundreds of clients to the next advisor? Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
So that's been a kind of a pain point that we've done such a good job at delivering service, but they, for a long time, people only wanted me. And so it was trying to convince them that, look, I've hired people way smarter than me, way, way smarter. and yes, they may not be an entrepreneur like me, which you don't need that. You need the advisor me. and I have the better version of that in these five people. And so that's been that continues to be a challenge, especially with the older people who have been with me for 20 plus years, that they don't see my face as much, other than being in the podcast or online or something like that, right? So I think scaling relationships is always difficult. And then, you know, if you go back to E Myth Revisited, which I think is a great book every entrepreneur should read, Michael Gerber's book. You read that book, he talks about the org chart. And we have, when we first start a business, we have to do a lot of things on that org chart. But really, we should be dreaming out ahead. What does your organizational chart need to look like 10 years from now? And maybe you're doing four of those jobs, but you need to draw that out. And so I'd say that in 2014, I also figured that out. So when I drew out my organizational chart, I was like, oh my gosh, like, okay, we got to hire people to do these jobs, where we, at the time, we had people, we had bodies, but we hired people that we liked. We didn't hire the people for the best position. Does that make sense?
Oh, that's a big entrepreneurial mistake. I hired every one of my friends.
Right. Yes. I hear that. My role now is if I do financial planning for individuals now, it's usually business owners, because I'm kind of the best at working with business owners and then airline pilots. The airline pilots, my crew has taken over, but mostly business owners. And the reason why is exactly that. I literally had a business interview yesterday. And I said, well, tell me about your employees. And they told me about all their friends. And I was like, this is not going to work well for you. This is what you need to start doing. Really back in 2014, I came through here and I terminated most of the relationships other than I think one or two. And we were a small firm still. And I built out my org chart, and then I started hiring people. As the revenue grew, I kept hiring people that had expertise in those areas. In fact, finally, yesterday was kind of a big win for us. We finally hired a SEC compliance person, one person dedicated only to SEC rules.
Wow.
And that was a position on my org chart 10 years ago, but we just kind of finally grew into the position where the person who was doing that role couldn't do five things. And so we took one of those roles off of her, and we said, okay, we're going to go hire a person to do this. So
I think that person is always a very unique character in movies and TV shows and stuff. Like, remember Billions, the compliance guy?
Yes. I would argue that that position, we'll just say this, since this is all recorded, that position could be a character in a movie already. I haven't started day one yet. I already know this.
Excellent. That's going to be fun to watch. As long as they keep you out of jail, that's their only job, to keep you out of jail.
Yes. I don't have any risk of going to jail. We're not stealing money here, but certainly fines. Fines for stupid stuff, you know, things that wouldn't have hurt anybody, but they can be nitpicky, right? Yep. I feel like this SEC is not as nitpicky as the last one. This one's really looking for Ponzi schemes. They caught one, I think, recently. I read in the paper in Georgia. So they're still doing their job. I hope they just focus their efforts on that. Like, go catch the guys doing the really bad stuff.
There was a guy here in Atlanta about 2 years ago who was busted. He was running a management firm, and the entire thing was just supporting his lifestyle.
In Atlanta. I think the last one was down in Noonan, actually.
Okay. Yeah, and this guy, his last name was Allen, I think.
Yeah. I think I remember that in the news. You know, the listeners you can protect yourselves from that several ways. One, you got to make sure you're using a custodian with the advisor that you've actually heard of, Charles Schwab or Fidelity, somebody like that. And then you never write checks to the advisor or the advisor's company. You write checks to the third party custodian. There's a big wall there. We use Charles Schwab. There's a big wall there. You can't go and grab people's money. But people, I don't know, it's human nature somewhat, but greed sets in and they listen to these guys who are very convincing. And they say things like, I can get you a 10% rate of return every single year, or 15%. There's no risk.
But I have to hold your money.
But I have to hold your money. And that's when you get in the car and you just run. Drive as fast as you can. Get away from that. And it goes back to also that I started off this talk with my industry is a very low barrier to entry. There's a lot of people that can say they're financial advisors with very limited experience and maybe devious intentions, and they're just really good salespeople.
Very true. Very true. Very scary. Tell us about the podcast. Do you think that it drives business as well? Has it been a useful tool for you? Have people said, "Oh, I heard your podcast and I'm here to give you my money now"?
Now, yes. 5 years ago, no. 5 years ago, we got 5 podcasts in and I looked at the downloads and there were 25 downloads. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that was my mom 24 times. So it's, podcast is there's a lot of them out there. There's hundreds of thousands, I think, of podcasts. We're very fortunate that we're in the top 5%, trying to get in the top 1% of listeners. But it wasn't always that way. So I'd say that to be successful with a podcast, you need to give away a lot of free information. There's no secret sauce to investing. There's a lot of false information there about financial planning. So we try to stick to topics that we think people are interested in. Sometimes you need to talk to your niche. So we about a third of our client base are airline pilots. So we have a lot of airline focused topics or pilot focused topics that could be taken in any field in some sense. So that's helped drive our success. We also do plan out our programming. So our programming is planned out 3 months in advance. So that allows us to find guests, allows us to really hone in on the topic at hand. But it's not scripted, you know, just bullet points, conversations just like this. And so it's A Wiser Retirement. You can find it anywhere you listen to a podcast, and it's been very successful.
Congratulations. I actually have listened to 3 or 4 episodes and enjoyed it very much. Y'all are doing a very good job there. So Casey, let's switch gears a little bit. What's the big market, the macro market, going to do? Are we going to finally get that recession they've been telling us is coming for 8 years now? Are we going to get rate cut in December? What are your thoughts?
If you've been investing for a recession, you've lost a lot of money, and those things are very hard to time. In fact, when the yield curve goes inverted, they say that triggers a recession, and I thought, that's really interesting because, you know, that happened a few years ago. The long-term and short-term bonds went flipped upside down on yield. And so I started researching that a little bit. And what I found out was, yes, it guarantees a recession. Well, guess how long? It can happen 4 months later or it could happen 8 years later. And I was like, oh, wow, that's not really an indicator at all when you don't know when it's going to happen. You know, there's a lot of what's happened recently has been powered by this new wave of AI in our investment committee meeting. I'm very fortunate that I have a portfolio manager as part of our team. I don't sit and watch this stuff every single day. He's in charge of forecasting and how we invest money. But, Andrew Pratt's his name. Andrew's been a great addition to our firm a few years ago. Andrew brought up in our last committee meeting that this AI boom looks nothing like the dot-com bubble back in 2000. Dot-coms were, you put dot-com in your name, people are just handing you money. This is a very different investment cycle into new technology. So I think this has some real legs, some real profitability to it. I know in our firm and how we're deploying AI, it drives a lot of efficiency. It's not going to replace anybody here, but it certainly makes us do things much more efficient as far as note-taking, monitoring, status of things that we want to know on a daily basis. As far as the Fed goes, I mean, obviously our president wants a lower interest rate. I don't know that he's being really listened to on that front, but you could argue that there's room for it, for a rate cut this month in December, but no one really knows. I think in the end, how you invest your money, it shouldn't matter. So many people tend to only, it's like walking down the street, only looking at your feet. They don't look down the road. If you walk down the street, only looking at your feet and you're running into a telephone pole, And that's how people invest, thinking very short term. You need to take a long-term approach to it. And you do that by making sure you have enough cash and reserves set aside. And that's what, as planners, that's what we're focused on. Do you have enough cash to, if the Fed doesn't do what the market thinks and the market sells off by 5 or 10%, how does that change your future? It really creates opportunity for you to invest more, but the cash is really for 2 years worth of living. You've got 2 years worth of expenses. This is for retirees. If you're working, you probably just need about 6 months, but you need to have set yourself up to where no matter what the market does, you're going to win. And the only way to do that is to drive your cost of investing down, use ETFs, low cost index funds, get that cost below 0.1% per year. Everything trades for free now in most platforms. Focus on having enough emergency reserves, keep your debt low or gone, and you're going to be just fine no matter what happens in the market. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's great advice. Great advice. I was expecting you to tell me exactly the minute that the recession was going to start. And so you know, that was the standard by which I was judging you, Casey. So
a very well, fair if you're, one. If you're going to look for new opportunities with a recession is when your neighbor loses a job and the depression is when you lose your job.
Yep.
So hopefully it's just a recession and you have opportunities to be investing in even the markets or your business or things that happen. You know, quick story. I remember during the financial crisis, I used to listen to Dave Ramsey quite a bit. And he had this whole story where a guy owned a lawn care company and he came in, you can watch Dave live. He came into the studio and he was all depressed. During one of the breaks, Dave came out. He knew him. And he said, "Hey, buddy, you know why he's so depressed?" And he goes, "Man, I've lost everything. I had to sell all my equipment. I had these big contracts that I was servicing and they all quit to save money and my business is just gone." He's like, "I'm so sorry. You know my story. You'll be okay." A couple hours later, this other guy comes in as happy as can be. And Dave says, "Why are you so happy?" He goes, "You won't believe it." He goes, "I just bought all this lawn equipment for next to nothing. And I'm going to double the size of my business probably in the next year." So it really has to do with your mindset and how you think about things and leverage. Keep debt away. You keep cash available. Everybody's going to be just fine no matter recession or not.
Casey, I just have to tell this story. My granddaddy was a country doctor. And one time he was, dealing with patients and one patient came in and he had delivered their baby and the patient came in and gave him a pig, a live pig to pay for it. And the next two or three patients came in, a man came in who was just, his heart rate was through the roof and he was swearing and he was so mad because someone stole his best pig last night, We happen to know where that pig was a setting and who ate it too. Casey, how do we get in touch, find out more about Wyzer, follow you online, listen to your show, all that, please.
You can find us all online at wiserinvestor.com. That's wiserinvestor.com. You can always call us at 678-905-4450. And then you can follow us on any social media you have. We have Facebook and LinkedIn. You can find us on Twitter even. So happy to help anybody who's listening who thinks that they need a blueprint for their financial life going forward and wants to be successful.
Casey, thank you so much, and we'll talk again in 10 years.
Yes. I'll see. I might be here in 10 more years. We'll see.
I'm going to try to be retired by then. And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question,
and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Again, thank you so much for being with us today. I am very excited and honored to welcome back to the show Shep Hyken. He is one of the absolute living legends in customer service. He has been the president of the National Speakers Association. He has won their Lifetime Achievement Award. He has published 6 best-selling books on customer service, and he also has a new radio show of his own. His books have been New York Times, Wall Street Journal bestsellers, and he has spoken for, and I love the way he does this. Listen to some of the clients he's had: American Airlines, American Express, Aetna, AAA, Anheuser-Busch, AT&T, and Abbott Laboratories. And those are just the A names of some of his past clients. Shep, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
And that is a great buildup. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, it's your background. I mean, my friend, you have an amazing experience. You started this in 1983, speaking for a living, right?
Right, right. So you can do the math. I'm old. Or I started when I was like 6 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
But no, seriously, I started right out of college. And that's kind of, I didn't have a job, didn't know what I was going to do. Saw a couple of motivational speakers. I said, well, I can do that. I had a little background with entertainment, doing magic shows, and I worked in nightclubs doing comedy and magic. So I felt good getting up in front of people. And real quickly, I learned that if I'm going to get up to do a speech, I better have something to talk about. So I started reading everything. And by the way, if you went to the bookstore and you looked at the business section, it was less than one shelf long worth of business books. So I really could read everything, at least that was available at the local bookstore. And I landed on a book about customer service. And I said, well, this is cool because this is what I've believed about since the very beginning, since my parents taught me to be nice to people. And I had my own little businesses when I was a teenager and growing up. And I always believed in doing the right thing by the customer, whether I was doing a magic show at a birthday party or I was plowing a driveway in the wintertime for a customer. I believed taking care of that customer. And it all came together when I read that book. And that's what I do now.
That seems so blatantly obvious. I think you and I had the same mother, right? The greatest generation type parent who taught us to just do right by people. How could we lose this? And so, Shep, how do we have generations of business people that don't understand this concept? How did we get broken, do you think?
Well, I think what happens is it's really easy to do on an individual effort if you have the right person. When you start to create a team, if you don't hire the right personalities, the right behavioral styles, if you don't hire the right people, you can get out of alignment. And if you also don't train the people and reinforce with the people that, this is the right thing to do. And training isn't something that you did. It's not something you do like when they onboard. Training is something you do ongoing. Even if it's 5 minutes once every few weeks to remind people just how important customer service is, they need to constantly be reminded. And I'll add this, it's not just for the front line, it's for everybody. If I'm not taking care of the person internally who is, my internal customer, somebody that depends on me, they can't do their job. And I believe that there is no way customer service can be better than what's happening inside of the company. So what's happening on the inside is felt on the outside by the customer.
But yet still, Shep, we have companies like Comcast. And I don't know what you think about Comcast, but I recently fired them at my house because the service was so horrendous. They still don't get it. How can these companies stay in business when they have no clue how to make the customer feel appreciated, welcomed, or even like they're being listened to?
So I have a theory about Comcast and other companies that are in that situation. I believe that Comcast is trying to turn things around. Their reputation has been tainted, tarnished, beaten up, whatever you want to say about it. It's not been good. And what's happened is they've had somebody come in, and they're trying to realign their support center, which is who you had to deal with, ultimately, for any customer service issues, and finally to actually discontinue using their service. And what happened is the reputation became so bad that even though they're turning it around, they're still marred by this. It will take time to get, you know, pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and get back on track. And I love that he even brought up the cable industry, because I think they're a perfect example of a lesson that we can all learn. This is what's cool. When I was a kid, there were four channels on TV. That was it, okay? Today, there's like 400 channels, and they're in high def. You can watch them when you want to watch them, on demand, record in one room, watch in another room. You can even watch them on your smartphone. It's amazing what cable TV has done. They're perhaps the most, I think, one of the most innovative technologies that have come around in the last several decades. But as cool as the technology is, you now have the service side of it. And when you think of cable TV and you move and you want to get it installed, what you think about is that you're going to have to take a half day off work without pay and wait for the cable guy to show up. And if he or she does show up, you know, will it be done right the first time? So there's this complete disconnect. And the best companies are in alignment. They have great product. They have great service, where one plus one is greater than the sum of the parts. It's more than two. But when the service falls the way it is, they get this reputation, such as what Comcast has. And I believe, and I'll make this prediction, 5 years from now, while Comcast may have the memory of some of these problems, I think they're going to be a better company as a result of having been given that black eye, especially last year with that, what I would call the biggest customer service debacle, 2014.
Well, it's going to be interesting with Google now coming in to compete. Google is in our neighborhood offering the exact same services, Shep, and they contacted us 2 months before they came and asked what size t-shirts we wore in our house and sent us all Google t-shirts to make sure that we would be brand ambassadors for them and just get excited about switching over to the new Google product. I mean, that's unbelievable customer service.
I know. So, well, actually, that's setting an expectation, and I love that they're doing that. Now they need to live up to that reputation that they've created for themselves. And if they do, you will actually be that evangelist that they want, that brand ambassador. I think that's a cool marketing strategy. For a few bucks that they're going to get you to convert over, it's going to be great, because guess what? They're going to have to spend less time with you on the phone talking to you about making the conversion, because you may have already made up your mind without them having to have a salesperson that's paid fairly well to come and talk to you, or to you know, pick up the phone and spend, you know, 20 minutes with you explaining the virtues of using Google. You're already there. So they send you a couple of t-shirts, you know, and probably cost less than what that sales call is going to be. And they've created some great expectations, and if they deliver on them, you're going to go out there and you're going to make it easy for them to sell your neighbors and your friends, because you're going to be talking about them.
I've already worn the t-shirt step twice to like school functions and things like that in the neighborhood. And people have asked, oh, you got, you know, it's creating a buzz. I'm out there advertising for them, and I'm proud and excited to be doing it, because I got a Google t-shirt in the mail for free. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
All right,
see,
so...
it's working.
It is working. It's totally working. Now I'm here talking to you about it. I'm so excited about it. I'm going to go put the t-shirt on as soon as this interview is over, Shep, if it's clean.
You know what else? All your listeners are hearing about it. They're going to go, yep. Google, when's Google coming to my town? You know?
Exactly. Okay. Small startup companies, I can see them amazing customers every time. Is it possible for the Abbotts, the American Expresses, to do the same level of customer service? Can they, these behemoth corporations, the Fortune 50, can they also amaze every customer every time?
Sure, they can. And let's talk about American Express, because that, and I think for our listeners, many of us probably have an American Express card, and we're consumers of that product. And even though it's a credit card, American Express is a great story, because they turned it around. They were, you know, the Comcast of the industry back then. I'm not saying they were at the very bottom, but they had serious customer service issues. Jim Bush, their senior VP of customer service worldwide came in and he turned the whole customer service experience around. He started to focus on the NPS score, Net Promoter Score, which for those who don't know, it's a single question that is asked to a customer, which goes like this. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's the likelihood that you would recommend us? And Jim Bush's goal was for every one of those support center reps, when they finished with their interaction with the member, and by the way, they call their customers members, that member would give them a 9 or a 10 in that survey. And he made sure that bonuses and compensation were based on those numbers, all the way up the line to even where his bonus is based on the entire call center's numbers being turned around. And I think that's a pretty cool thing. So what happens is the metric isn't how many calls can I do in an hour? How many, you know, contacts can I get through? No, it's when I'm finished, is this person willing to recommend us to their colleagues, friends, family members? And when you start looking at that and you see how things turned around, they're a case study. They're a model for how that works.
And you know, we have had Net Promoter Score gurus on the show before, and it seems like a fantastic system, and the companies that are using it certainly seem to validate the system. It's something we'll have some more gurus on that soon for our listeners to really dive into this. Shep?
Right, and it's one question, by the way. It's a very telling question. It's a powerful question. There's other survey models that work as well. I just enjoy that one, and I think that's what American Express did help turn around. By the way, other great companies, great role models, like Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Now, they don't start with an A, they start with an E. That's one of my first clients that I ever had, and it's really interesting how Enterprise uses that NPS score to gauge whether or not they're doing a great job. They were number one in their industry, and they acquired two other car rental agencies, Alamo Rental Car and National Car Rental. And what's interesting is that if you looked at the top 10 agencies, Enterprise was in the top five at the number one position. Alamo and National were in the bottom half of the class, if you will. And within a matter of a couple of years, they turned the culture around in those two companies. And starting in 2012, I believe, 12, 13, 14, and 15, they are now the 1, 2, and 3 companies in the industry. I mean, Peter Drucker once said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I believe what happened is Enterprise invited Alamo and National to have breakfast with them. And they ate it, and it was great. You know, they drank the Kool-Aid, if you will, and they turned their culture around.
In your book, Amaze Every Customer Every Time, you have 52 tools to actually implement this. Can you give us a couple of those tools that would be especially applicable to a small business?
Sure. Well, first and foremost is the first one. I think it's a great one. Act like an owner. And that means that all employees should act like owners. They should take pride in what they do and deliver a level of service as if they were the owner. And this came from a young kid about 18 years old who worked at a pizza restaurant who came up to me after one of my presentations and said, I just had the greatest compliment. One of the guests at a restaurant asked if I was the owner. And I said, well, that's great. And why did they ask that? And the kid said, I actually asked the same question. Why would you ask that? And the guest said, because you take so much pride in what you do. And at that moment, he realized he wanted every guest to think of him as an owner. And a couple of things were happening here that are really important. Number one, the owner was somebody that he wanted to be like anyway. So it was a good role model. Number two, the owner trained him and empowered him to deliver a level of service that was like acting like an owner. So I think that's a pretty powerful concept right off the bat. That's the number one tool in the book and one of my very favorites.
That makes so much sense. That's hard for entrepreneurs to do. Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the business. I'm not going to let you act like me, Shep. I want to have my superiority above you.
Well, do you only want to have a solo entrepreneurial business, or do you want to grow a little bit? Even if all you do is want 8 or 10 employees, You want every one of those people that step up and deliver a level of service that you would want to deliver to your customers.
Do you have to especially empower your employees to have this work? I mean, at some level, that's going to be, as you referred to earlier, giving something back if customer service is bad. You know, you had a bad experience with the pizza today. I'm sorry, let me give you a free Coke. You know, traditionally, only the owner or the manager can do that. Should I empower my employees to give them the ability to give away free Coca-Cola or free dessert?
So let me ask a question. If you're the owner of the business and there's a problem out there, and that employee comes up to you and says, hey, the pizza was bad, I replaced the pizza, is it okay if I, you know, take care of their Cokes, you know, or whatever it is, their soft drinks? And the manager says, yes, I'd like you to do that. Do you think the manager needs to be asked every single time now from that point forward if the same situation is to happen? And the answer should be no, they shouldn't have to. Because once the manager says, this is what I want you to do, they should only have to say it once, and then the person go out and do it. Now, what can happen, ultimately, is that employee may test the boundaries. They may take it a little too far. That's okay. Reel them back in. Make it a teaching opportunity. You know, at the Ritz-Carlton, the housekeepers are allowed to spend up to $2,000 on a guest to take care of them if there's a problem. The housekeepers. Now, typically, the room doesn't cost $2,000 a night. Might be a few hundred dollars a night. But here's the concept. One day, I was staying at the Ritz, and there were dirty towels in my room, even though the room was supposed to be cleaned. So I happened to see a housekeeper, and I said to the housekeeper, hey, excuse me, but there's dirty towels left over from the night before in my room. And she was appalled, horrified, upset, I don't know, but she jumped right away to make sure that that room was spotlessly clean. I think that's what they should have done, right? Well, what happened later on, I came back to my room. There was a small little box of chocolate. It had two little pieces of chocolate in it with a little note that said, sorry that the room was dirty. I hope this chocolate will give you a little sweet feeling or something like that. It was something very clever. And I thought to myself, pretty cool. Now, what do you think that box of chocolates cost? Probably about 50 cents.
Yep.
Less than a dollar, okay? She didn't say, oh, my God, dirty towels. I'm going to give him the entire room for free. No, she knew what to do and probably did not have to go ask a manager or get a supervisor's approval to leave a little box of chocolate for me.
There is a company, Shep, that I am absolutely obsessed with. It's my favorite place in the world to take my young children. It's down in Orlando. I bet you can guess who it is. They have a policy. They have a policy that bothers the daylights out of me, though I still love the company. And I don't know if it's written, but I've experienced this personally. We are sorry that you felt that way. Instead of saying, we are sorry, they have trained their employees to say, we are sorry that you felt inconvenienced. And they're not acknowledging that they inconvenienced you if your room's not ready when you check in. Or the time I did it was I took my kids on a sleigh ride there at Christmas, and the two guys driving the sleigh were having a very inappropriate conversation. I gave them the noise, and they still continued to have this inappropriate conversation, and my kids overheard it. The response was, we're sorry that you felt bad during the sleigh ride. Not, well, our guys did a horrible job. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think we're playing around with words here. And I when we talk to our clients about dealing with customers in angry situations, we want to immediately acknowledge the problem. I can understand why you would feel that way. I want to apologize that you feel that way, okay? Because most of the time, now in the particular instance that you're talking about, these two employees were definitely the root of the problem. But most of the time, when an employee is approached with a problem, it probably isn't their fault. Somebody else might have done something wrong, system broke. And what you want to do is you want to take your employees and say, hey, don't take it personally, but it is your job to turn this thing around. Even though it may not be your fault, you are now accountable for this customer's perception of the company. So maybe that's a statement they taught them to use But at the end of the day, I'm going to give them some credit. They acknowledged it. They said they were sorry. Now, the thing is, did they do anything about it? Now, we don't need to get into that for this particular situation, but that's the next step. What are the steps that these people or the company will take to fix whatever needs to be fixed?
Well, you know, in the end, I felt good enough about it that I've taken my kids there since, and we're going again in February. Well, so
there you go. I want to be one of your kids.
I was born in Orlando, and my father took me there every Wednesday to the place we're talking about. from when I was like 3 until 4, he knew that he was leaving, and Wednesday was his day off. And it just became part of my soul. And I have amazing pictures, Shep, of me leaving a certain ride at the age of 4, and then my 4-year-old son leaving the exact same ride, picture taken from the same perspective, you know.
How cool is that?
It is just
and
so
I hope
cool.
Your son does the same thing for his son.
That would make me so happy. That would make me so happy. Yes. So we have time, Shep, for one more tool. Can you give me one more thing that our small business listeners need to do to deliver amazing customer service?
Sure. Why don't we just think about what the overarching philosophy is, and that is customer service is not a department. It's a philosophy to be embraced by everyone, and that means the people on the front line, the people behind the scenes, the most recently hired employee, the CEO, or anybody within an organization. It is their job to deliver a stellar performance to whoever is dependent upon them, be it an internal customer or an external customer. It's basically, it's not a department, it's a philosophy.
Well, I just have to continue our story about that company down in Orlando. One of my friends was on one of their cruises. CEO of the company was on the same cruise. They met at a meet and greet because he is a vacation timeshare owner at this place. And 2 days later, the CEO remembered his name when they crossed each other in the dining room. And so that
wow.
CEO, Bob Iger, remembered my friend's name 2 days later, and I'm sure Iger meets 1,000 people a day.
Wow. That's what makes great leaders great. They show and basically showcase what the behavior is supposed to be. You know, Walt Disney, one of the leaders of one of these great companies, used to do something he called stooping to excellence. And that is, if he walked by a piece of paper, he would stoop down, pick it up, and throw it away, because he knew that every other employee at Disney was watching him. And if he walked by it, he gave permission to others to walk by. Basically, what he was saying is, do what I do. And that's what great leaders do. They're not do what I say, not do what I do, but no, do what I do. Showcase the behavior.
I love it. Shep, how can we find out more about you, get copies of your books, and follow you on social media, please?
Sure. Well, you can go to my website, which is hyken.com. If you want me to teach you some of these things virtually, face-to-face, just go to shepondemand.com, and I'll be with you 24 hours, 7 days a week, teaching you the kinds of things we talked about today. And just, type my name into a Google search, and you'll find out how to reach me just about on any of the social channels.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today. I hope you have a fantastic holiday season, and I hope you'll come back soon.
Thanks. I hope you have me back, and it's great to chat with you. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
We are out of time. Have a great day, everyone. Take care. Be safe. Go make $1 million by now.